piano. My own way of doing folk music. Sharing process it is, and that because every time I go out and do this, or you do, you're taking a risk. It's threat of constant humiliation, right? Someone said that to me. Aren't you always under constant threat of humiliation? And it is. Every time you do this, every time you bring something like this out, you're sharing, but you're also doing some risky endeavors. So.
Some risky business.
Yeah. Risky business.
Well, we're happy. I mean, that's our goal, is to sort of create a space where people can come and share and feel good about it. And we're very, very honored to have you back. So thank you very much for coming. We were so excited when we got your email.
That's great.
Yeah.
What a boost. It is. Because, you know, to be very honest, I might have told you that you're the only college around that's accepted my music. And, you know, I send it to UMass or, you know, folk show here or there. Oh, no, it's not quite my cup of tea or whatever. So I feel lucky.
You feel lucky to have you here too.
Yeah, definitely. And I've been thinking a lot actually about your music, and of course I have it on my computer, so whenever it's on shuffle, it comes on, and I sort of stop and think about it. But it's, you have versions of your own songs, and as you know, as well as your arrangements of, say, traditional folk songs, are so unique. I was thinking a lot about how people cover traditional folk songs, and sort of. There are a few similar ways that I feel like people arrange them and cover them, and I don't know how you do it, but it's very, it's just a very, very unique sounding. It's very, I feel like it's very you, like it comes from someplace deep inside, and it's sort of a sense of just you playing and singing is just, it just, you do what feels right to you, I think is what sort of it comes across to me as anyway. So if you could speak to that, sort of how you sit down and say, okay, I'm gonna try to do an arrangement of this song, you know, sort of what goes through your mind and your process. And
wow, Kelly, I think I couldn't ask for a better commentary actually on my work, because in essence it is an individual spiritual process. Everything I choose to do is a result of something that comes from the interior. It's not, you know, it's not a matter of copying or looking outside in any way, because that, for me, that is not a good thing to do. It is, and I end up feeling very down about what I am doing. But so I'm driven by intuition, the things that occur to me, like I've always been drawn to do this song, for example, you know, because my dad used to sing it, and it went, I've arranged it a number of times already, but I think this is going to last a while. I'm not going to, you know, I'm happy with the way this one developed, and it all, I would say, all the choices I make are ones where I don't know if I have, I just have, unfortunate that I have an eye or an ear for where something is meant to go, or, but does that begin to answer?
I think so, yeah.
Or comment on what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't know, I've been thinking about it a lot, especially this week, knowing that you were coming and sort of, I don't know, thinking about your music and what we could possibly chat about. And I have this vision of you sort of waking up very early in the morning when it's still dark out and sitting at your piano and just kind of feeling it. And that's just like sort of what it feels like to me, which is something that I feel like I haven't necessarily associated with a lot of other music or have heard in a lot of other places. Mm-hmm. So
many people have told me that there's a transformative quality in what I do. Nothing that I do is ever intentional. I don't think about doing something. That's not entirely accurate, but it's like a thesaurus is only good for what it can kind of pop in your own mind. It's not going to, you know, I studied songwriting at Berkeley. Okay. It took me many years to leave that and then to somehow have it chewed up inside so that I could use what was important to me. And it's funny, whenever we talk about these things, I feel like I went off on a track and I say, okay, where did Kelly start? But I do. I wake up often at 4 or 5 in the morning and in the dark. And I've read where some painters do that. They will begin their work in the morning, that intuitive, dreamlike state with their eyes closed. And it's kind of like that when I'm at the keyboard. The first thing I do, it's not to practice a song or memorize anything. It's just to be with whatever piece I've been working on, maybe. But it's often with my eyes closed. And things come out as they will when I fiddle.
You know, I get this this feeling from your music that there's a great deal of centrality and thematicness to it, in the sense, a lot of, oftentimes because of the way poetry works into it, and how there's a very, it feels like there's an intention to the songs, and I'm thinking and feeling that you seem to have an ability to intuitively find those ideas just by exploring creatively.
Wow. Can you name some of those themes or that central thing?
A lot. It feels a little bit like one of them would be the connections between generations and between the old and the new, or more appropriately, the old and the you. Uh-huh. And
I like that.
Yeah, right?
Wow.
And the way that, like, what Kelly was speaking to about how you re-sculpt traditional folk songs and bring something very different to them.
When I took bel canto voice lessons, that was therapy for me. For 7 years, that was therapy. And I was beginning to study at Berkeley at the time. Also, this is really like just a lifelong therapy, a lifelong individuation process. And I believe those themes, I've never heard someone describe it that way, but I love it. I think that's really, I don't know how you felt that, but that's accurate to me. From me, and you know, you've probably heard this some kind of idea about, as you, I don't know if it's Buddhist or Jungian, that you travel in circles around some central issues or experiences in your life, and you revisit them, you know, on a kind of a cyclical basis. And so then I'm succeeding in part in hearing the things that resonate in that spiral. So that's what I'm doing it for. That's what I'm alive for, to articulate the things that I find inside. Mm-hmm. I dig for that. I hadn't experienced the day of the storm, I have to tell you, that I've never had in my life. And it was very, very difficult. For some reason, I have this incredible sensitivity to noise. And so there was a generator at the house next door, and I mean literally out my window. I thought I was going to go mad from, literally felt like that? I haven't. And all I could do do was walk around town. I'd come back in the house, I couldn't even be at home anymore. But there's something in that experience which was so awful and at the edge of something that was probably just another example, but nothing I'd ever arrived at before, of what occurs in that, mm-hmm. in that digging of one around one's life.
I think that's a remarkable place to dig.
Definitely. Another thing that I wanted to bring up that I feel like we didn't speak about as much the last time that you were here is obviously songwriting is something that's very important to you, and music and expressing yourself through that, but also just words. You're an incredible poet on top of this. And I explored some of your earlier albums and found some spoken word things on them. And just think, Cyrus is actually focusing a lot on poetry right now.
Personally?
I am.
Or in the study of it?
Yeah, both writing and reading. And
oh my.
All things in between.
So do you feel like what you use for your poetry differs from, say, what you write that you use for songs? Do you turn your poetry into songs? Is there a divide there, or?
It's all the same.
It's all the same.
Chasm, whatever you want to call it. And some things have been poems or have been phrases that I've saved away because I knew they would belong somewhere. So it almost doesn't matter where it goes.
It all comes from the same place.
Right. But I think there are places where it works better as a poem, and there are places where it'll work better in a song.
Do you think that part of that comes as a way of giving emphasis to certain things in different ways, or giving stillness or movement to certain words versus other words that maybe need the music or...
You're wondering that, or you find that yourself?
Both.
Or
I find that myself, and I wonder if I'm right.
It's interesting you bring that up, because on the first two albums I did write poetry, or I used, you know, kind of alternating poems and songs. And for when I was writing Talon of the Black Water, there was that question, was I going to write, have poetry or have any kind of spoken word in there at all, like as woven in and out in the same way? But my experience writing the words or having the words come up for Talon was enough of an experience, I thought, that I didn't need to do poetry too, because I don't want to say traumatic enough, but something like that.
Well, what do you think was different, or what was different in the experience of writing Talon of the Blackwater that made you not need to have that poetry?
I turned where I went into songs, and I think a number of things had happened. My father had died. You know, I'd reached some place in my own psychic development that, you know, I had the dream where literally from the neighbor's backyard, this black gushing water came out into mine. And it was kind of a similar experience as far as the words gushing out for that title track. Mm-hmm.
And the title being from that dream, I'm assuming. Part of it?
Well, you know, to be honest, that was originally a prose poem. Talon of the Blackwater and Graces was just a paragraph. It had come from looking at some gorgeous photographs from the National Geographic of this place in Florida. But I
kept that title because I knew it was something, but I just didn't know how it would be, you know, where it would be finalized, or, you know, as much as you can.
What strikes you about a piece of prose or poetry that you've written that makes it turn into music?
Mm-hmm. Wow, what a question. It's very infrequent that something will come out as a whole. Very infrequent. Mm-hmm. Most often I receive just phrases at a time, like "When I Left Loss" or "Talon of the Blackwater and Graces." And then I sit with that for weeks, years, not knowing, not having anything else with it. And that's a very good question. I'm not sure. Again, if it's just the feeling like of being drawn to do it. Obviously, that prose poem sat around for 10 years, and it didn't become music, but there was something in the message in my period of life. Hearing a song at the Y while I was, you know, on the bicycle, had this cool rhythm. I said, "Ooh, I like that. I'm going to go home and see if I can make something of that." So that's where talent came, the music came from. Hearing a really cool rhythm somewhere else. Which, have you guys ever seen that documentary about the deaf drummer, percussionist? I want to say Evelyn Glennie. She's Scottish. But I recommend that highly. I think it's called Touch the Sound. But there's percussion. There's sound everywhere. Of all kinds, you know?
Sometimes from generators at the neighbor's house, other times from beautiful
pianos. Right, that was a hellish experience that I don't know if I have any expression for yet. But I think, when you have experiences like that, they're related to something. They don't just come out of the blue. So I think my job is to sit with them enough and hold them enough until they change or speak to me somehow. Yeah. And you know, another cool thing I'll tell you, and it's kind of related to poetry because I'm speaking of when I write music alone, like minimal piano pieces or something. In a way, it's kind of like your question, you know, to have bare words. I've also been drawn to write bare music, and so that's just interesting. It just seems to be a form of what it is you have inside. You know?
Yeah, the attempt to say as simply as possible what feels very complex.
What's as true as possible.
You guys are just tuning in. We're listening to some music and sitting and chatting with Laura Sarazuma. And we're excited to have her back. She was here last year. I think it was around finals time. I remember talking to you about how stressed I was about a Leo Tolstoy paper that I had to write.
That's right, you were.
It came out well. Actually.
Oh, good.
It was good. The stress was worth it. We're here sitting and chatting with Laura. And we're going to post all of her info and everything on our website so you guys can check out her music later too. If all of this tickles your fancy, which I'm sure it will. Would you like to play another song?
Well, yeah, speaking of the minimalist idea, and also this issue of rewriting, which is could be a whole nother great topic, right? There's a song from my first album called Who Needs This Heart? And just recently, or over this year, I have been drawn to rewrite that. And also, I had been writing a lot of minimal piano And I thought, well, let me combine this particular piece of piano music with a rewrite of Who Needs This Heart. And I felt like I've come to a stopping point with this song, too, at least for a while.
Thank you.
That was wonderful.
Thank you.
It reminds me of this album that I'd heard at my friend's house once that his father was playing. It's an album by George Winston. It's called Montana, A Love Story. And just the sound is resonates to me as similar, of the piano at least. Actually, I'd had you'd said you'd rewritten this song, right?
Yeah.
How often do you go about the process of revisiting your old songs?
This is the first time I would say that it came with a good purpose to do so. I mean, I've been there. It's often that I will look back on an album and say, or play it for the first time in a year or something, and say, ooh, I would change that, or, you know. But this time, I knew I had, I tell you, I had gone into a studio of the guy who was the guitar tech for Keith Richards had me over, and he listened to he had heard Talon, and he really thought it was really a special voice, and so he invited me into the studio, and he played some things for me, and one of them was a blind 19-year-old woman, and something about the sparseness and the space of that song really drew me back to this one, and that really was the inspiration for the rewriting of this song. So, you know, it hadn't been on my mind for a long time, but I was aware it was a good song. I was aware I was happy with where the lyrics had come from. I knew they were from a good place. So I wanted to preserve them in a better musical arrangement, so, which was interesting. Which, yeah, I'll tell you what happened. It's just that all I did in terms of the chords and the relationship of the chords and the words was I just shifted the lyrical phrase over, like a couple of bars or something, and that was the click for getting the whole thing going. So a lot of the chords are the same or similar, you know. Yeah, you never know what kind of things are gonna, you know, just little things that break it open for you.
The process of revision and revisiting is a strange one.
Because it's, yeah, I think it has to come again. It has to be a good reason for. Yeah,
and it feels almost like it has to be, it has to fit the revision. Or the revisiting, moreover, it seems almost like it would have to fit with the genuine creation that accompanied the genesis of the song or the poem.
Yes.
And so, did you find that you had? Is that what you'd found? That
I found that I had done it more right.
It's funny, I often think of listening to, you know, like a favorite album or something, or, you know, even rereading a book. I'm known to read the same 20 books over and over and over again. But it always strikes me as being sort of amazing how, at different points in your life, whether they're 10 years apart or a week apart, you can relate to something so differently.
Yes.
But it's still just as meaningful as it was before, just in a different way. So did you sort of find that in rewriting that song? Like, it was still relevant to you, but did you sort of see it in a different way, or is it still what it always has been?
I think you'd like to think that it's deeper, right? That you know, when you read the book again, you're at a wiser level or something.
Supposedly.
All right. But yes, I could be more mature in facing this song, and there was, in fact, enough that I could not use the bridge that was in the first song to say, okay, does this really go here anymore? you know, to ask those kinds of questions. It's all about the work, right? It's not about some convention of verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, you know. Mm-hmm. It's about, it's about the work. I can't wait to have you hear another rewrite, and this is from the second album, but it's not, I'm still working on it. It's been going on a long time, but it's a, you know, I never thought that I would be so excited and so deeply involved in another revision of something, but, so that's cool.
That's
yeah. Yeah, stay with it, is what I say.
That's really important. I know there aren't, at least publicly, I feel like a lot of musicians who do revise things and then, you know, either play them out again or, you know, re-release them much differently than they were the first time. So it's a really neat concept. And I'm wondering now if the majority of songwriters do it, or maybe they don't. Or they do it secretly, perhaps. I don't really know. I've gone back and revisited things that I've written in the past and have just gotten frustrated and sort of not completed. There's still sort of works in progress, but I feel like it's a very different skill set and a very different sort of feeling to doing that than writing something for the first time or even revising something as you're still writing it. With your songs, do you ever feel like, do you know when they're finished? You know, can you sit down and say, okay, this is done? Or is everything sort of always open-ended, sort of like clay? Like, I could go back and fix this whenever I wanted, or I could change that.
Well, I think you do the best that you can. And yes, I do have a sense of when something's done. When I wrote Who Needs His Heart, I wasn't saying, oh, I think I'll probably rewrite it in 10 years,
right.
But, you know, I'll go ahead and record it now. But I never would have thought rewriting or revision would have been such a deep process, I guess is what I'm saying. And so just as challenging. And challenging in a way differently than when you first wrote it, because you are already accepting the fact that you've got to go deeper with something, that you've got to do something better, more appropriate to the tone or the theme or the core of the piece.
Yeah, that's really neat. I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Would you like to play some more for us? Or?
Sure, I'll do something. You guys have something on deck for, but I will go ahead.
Yeah, either way, up to you.
This is my version of Every Night When the Sun Goes In. Every night when the sun goes in.
As that song ended, Laura, your hands are sort of crossed over like this.
Yes.
On the piano. And it just, the way it looked, felt like it fitted the ending of the song.
Ah.
Just like, just what it looked like happened to align very well with how it sounded and felt.
Mm.
It was just this little thing that I thought.
Oh, that's wonderful, though. It's wonderful. That's what you're always after, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Hmm.
Yeah, going back to, it just amazes me, I'll say it again, to me anyway, it's so evident that your music just feels so right to you. Like, I even wonder if that sort of thing, you know, the decision to cross your hands and, you know, piano part, was sort of just a subconscious, okay, this feels right, so I'll do it. It's kind of crazy how that just works out.
I'd say maybe a year and a half or so, I've really just loved the working with the concept of crossed hands, and I've written a lot of piano pieces, you know, short little pieces, kind of like the one that preceded Who Needs His Heart, but it's all about crossing the hands, and it's very cool the kinds of rhythms and harmonies that you get, and it's quite a mind twister too. And when you write it, when I write it on manuscript, I say, okay, left hand up an octave, right hand down an octave or something. It's really kind of fun. I get so much enjoyment out of it. And in fact, let me go ahead and I'm going to attempt to play an instrumental piece that has some of that concept in it. It's called Little Moon and Drew, and that is the name of my two of my cats we got from shelter, and the mother gave birth like in 24 hours of coming into our house, you know. But she had been outdoors for a long time in the winter. It was cold, and so it was very skinny, and the two of the babies died. One was very, very sick. We call her Moon. George came up with all the names. He has such great names. But I was having to tube feed her, give her injections, and give her fluids. And I was so, so scared for her life. And this is the song that was written during that time when she was just weeks old.
you.
I noticed more that time because you had mentioned it that you were crossing your hands. And I think that would probably confuse me a lot. You can pull it off easily.
It's a little tricky sometimes, but.
But really does sort of form this really neat effect. That definitely, I was watching your hands and it was very just neat looking. In general.
That's cool.
How much time do we have? It's only 4:30.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Do you want to delve back into the Come Away Melinda?
Oh, sure.
Version, and then I'd love that. That I have as well.
I'd love to hear that, yeah.
If you want to talk about sort of your trio a little bit and...
Oh, I guess I would like to. good idea. This is the first song that we have recorded, gone into the studio record, though I've worked with this trio bass player and fretless bass player and drummer for about a year and 9 months, maybe. And we are playing at... Luthiers is coming Saturday. The Pioneer Arts Center of East Hampton is trying to build a space, a new performance space, and so they're having benefit concerts, you know, over the next, I don't know how long it's going to take to raise the money, I guess. So we're doing a benefit for Pace at Luthiers, which is on Cottage Street in East Hampton on Saturday, 7 to 8. It's part of an art walk that they have the second Saturday of every month in East Hampton. I'm assuming they have power. Because when I went there Tuesday, they didn't. So, but that's a days away. So, so we really wanted to get in and record because we've done a number of live shows, but of course, it's kind of cool to really do it well too, you know, and get it down in a real professional way. So the fella that had produced my third album said, why don't you bring the guys in? I said, all right, and pick a song. So we picked Come Away Melinda, and we just went a couple of Saturdays ago, and that's the story. And this is just the first mix. So yeah, but I was so excited, and knowing I was coming here, I wanted to share it with you guys. But I'm sure it'll undergo change.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
So I have actually Laura's trio's version of Come On Melinda, and I also downloaded an older one by Uriah Heep.
Oh, no kidding.
So, do you want to start maybe with the other one? And then
yeah,
yours?
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay.
The comparison is really neat. I hope you guys enjoy it as much as we do.
Just a picture book they had before the war. Daddy, daddy, come and see. Daddy, come and look. Why there's four or five little Melinda girls inside my picture book. Come away, Melinda. Come in and close the door. There were lots of little girls like you before they had the war. Oh, Daddy, Daddy, come and see. Daddy, hurry, do. Why, there's someone in a pretty dress. She's all grown up like.
So that was the two more versions of, well, yeah.
We had the solo version live earlier, Come Away Melinda. That last one was Laura with her trio doing it. And before that was another version of it. So very cool to sort of juxtapose all of them. And
see how things are acting differently.
Yeah. Didn't know it well. But definitely, I'm glad that we got to sit and listen to a bunch of different versions of it. Now I really, really like it. Listen to it more and analyze it and tear it apart.
Yeah, see what was originally written probably would be interesting too.
It's probably one of those songs that no one's really sure who originally wrote it, right?
Fred, yes, they do have. Though I think there's some people afterwards who said that they wrote it. So, but Fred Hellerman and Fran Minkoff were the two that are credited, with that song.
I'd love to listen to their version of it also.
That would be, to hear the Weavers or something sing it. I don't know if the Weavers sang it. You would think they would since he was a member of them.
I mean, it's mentioned that on some internet searching that there was a mention of the Weavers, but I'm not sure if they played it.
Nothing's coming up.
Would you like to play another song, Laura?
I could. And then, yes, why not? I thought I would like to do another new piece that, but wait, it's a rewrite. And you know what? It's a rewrite of Who Will Pass This On from Talon, which is, this is the piece that was really the jazz quartet or whatever arranged, because T. Lavitz was the piano player for that particular number. And I have always wanted to redo that song because I wanted to put it in a context in which I could play it. I would feel like it was me playing it, not me copying what T wrote. He's a phenomenal jazz player. I'm not. it's not my branch. So I will do this. I will try this. I haven't done this too many times when we've been working on it as a trio. So this has been radically changed. That would be interesting to hear the difference.
I was going to say, I have it right here.
Wow. I don't know what to do first, but I'll go ahead and let me try.
You and I are not unscathed. We seek the bones of our own making. Whisper in the smell of autumn. Who will pass this?
That would be something else. Yeah. Yeah.
We seek the bones of our own making, whisper in the smell of autumn, who will pass this on? We are one from the beginning, sworn to me, softer than a song. My heart always dreamed to be common, sweet as the morning. I have seen the whole world, touch tomorrow in each September, listen to the voice rejoicing. There you'll find love. Deeper than the ocean, sworn to me, softer than a song. My heart always dreamed you'd be coming, sweet as the morning air, suspended like heaven, treasure always for me. Sworn to me, softer than a song. I had always dreamed you'd be coming, sweet as the morning, crisp as the leaves falling down.
So that was Who Will Pass This On, from Talon of the Blackwater by Laura Sarazuma, who is here with us live today, if you're just tuning in. And she's been playing some wonderful music for us and having some pretty fun conversations. So.
Definitely.
We're happy to have
her. Same here.
Awesome. So, what would we like to do from this point? You're more than welcome to play some more if you'd like to.
No, I think I'm done.
I don't know how.
Okay.
Okay. Awesome. If we could, we'd keep you here all night.
So, Kelly, would you like to play some music, or shall I?
I think you should.
Okay.
You start out.
I can do that.
That's typically the trend. Cyrus first, Kelly second. With music, nothing else.
All right, this is a song by Modest Mouse called Sleepwalking. And then after that is a song called Buffalo by Mountain Man. And then a song by James Blake called I Mind. So up first, Sleepwalking.
And we just would like to say again, thank you so much to Laura for being here today, for coming and filling our ear with wonderful music.
You should all go listen to Talent of the Blackwater.
You should. We're going to put all of her info up on our website and also the blog that we keep, so that you guys can check her out further. Mm-hmm. And do you have any, you mentioned the show on Saturday, any more upcoming shows in the area or anywhere else? No. So they can definitely check your website to
Right.
Awesome.
Yeah, cool. Thanks so much, you guys. I really love coming. It's such a
We love having you here.
Experience.
It's always a pleasure.
Please come back anytime.
Okay, up first, Sleepwalking by Modest Mouse.
Bye.